welcome to another episode of the show. I am Bill Carnes with my co-host Dave Champion. Together we are
totally unprepared.
So today we've got a few different things we're probably going to get to. I know you had something you wanted to chat about,
we
Dave.
We have a potpourri.
We do, yeah. We're going to be all over the map on this one.
Yeah, a lot of people, especially if they watch the Dave Champion show that used to be on KPVM, and I've mentioned it here as well, that I stopped doing the Dave Champion show because I wanted to focus on the blog page, which is DaveChampionsLiberty.com. No, if you've got that up there and you can throw it up for them, that's fine. Dave Champions Liberty. Yeah, there it is right there. Thank you, Noah. And I just wanted to let you know that the site is up. At one point I said, we'll let you know when it's up. It's been up for a couple weeks. It's doing great. Go to the blog page. When you go to, there's the home page. There's information about Dave that goes into all sorts of my background and so forth. There's a page on tattoos. There is a page on drug policy. These are all up at the top of the thing. Drug policy and other matters. But the blog page has a series of articles and videos that you might find interesting. It goes into more detail. I might talk about something here briefly, but I go into far more detail on the blog page. So have at it. Also, Bill, you and I like to acknowledge, we were just talking about one of your businesses that you think is doing an excellent job.
Yes.
And we like to acknowledge this on the show. And I've mentioned them before, but the more I go there, the more I'm liking what I'm seeing, and that is Fit for 10, which ironically is right across the street from your business that you think is doing such a great job, which is, I believe, Wings and Things.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things that I enjoy about Fit for 10, and my hesitation is I don't want to compare them against any other gym. I don't think that's fair to the other gyms. But the owner actually came down, because he owns several gyms, quite a few as a matter of fact, came down, spent a couple days there, brought in a construction crew, did a bunch of work, put a bunch of new machines in, put all sorts of fans in to keep the air moving around, and things that I've been looking, coming from the big city, right, coming from L.A., things that I've been looking at various gyms in town for as long as I've lived here and said, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they, you know, because the gym industry is not rocket science. There's a protocol. And there's a protocol for when people enter the gym to get their money and make sure they're members. There's a protocol for the temperature. There's a protocol for the type of equipment. All these, it's a me too business. Okay. You understand the steps, you do the steps. Except in prom, where people just run a gym whatever way they want, even if it's not financially successful or whatever. So, as I've been wanting, and by the way, these protocols are in place because they work. They're effective for both the members and the owners. And so as I've been watching now, I've been going over there for, I'm going to guess, close to 2 months now, and saw and met the owner and watched what they're doing. They're actually probably the only gym in town that's following the actual industry protocols that make for a good gym experience.
So, very nice.
Yes, and I, you know me, I've been a gym guy for 30-plus years. So to see that going on in this town, it's like, yeah!
I talked about it before. I had a great experience, a couple of them, really good experiences over at Tire Works here in Perump. Yeah. And I had another great one about 3 weeks ago.
Oh,
man.
Really?
They really took care of me, just great people over there. And, yeah, right across from Fit for 10 is PV Wings and Things. And I'm actually going to be over there tonight. That's the night before everybody's watching this, Wednesday.
So by the
night.
Time they see this, they can't come over there and bug you.
Exactly. I'm going to go over there with some friends. We're going to go see Heath, and we're going to have some chow. And then he has a Whiskey Wednesdays, which is something I was kind of hoping that he'd do. And we're going to go over there and see some of his new whiskey creations.
Heath.
Heath, H-E-A-T-H.
Is he the gentleman that used to run the Laugh Factory?
Yes.
The same Heath?
Yeah, he's now, he and his dad, they're partners
and
majority owners in Wings and Things now, and he runs a bar.
Fun guy.
Yeah.
Chatted with him several times when he was running
the Laugh Factory. Yeah, he's nice, a pretty funny guy.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you have some personal news, which I'm very excited about.
I do. You might remember a couple of months ago, on June 1st, I was arrested by Nye County Sheriff.
I don't remember.
Deputy Joseph McGill, who placed me under arrest for impersonating an officer.
Placed you under false arrest.
Okay, yeah.
Let's call it what it is. Yeah.
For impersonating a public officer is the actual charge. And then a couple of things dealing with vehicle registration. My arraignment was earlier this week on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's keep the audience in the loop, because you and I talk about these things from time to time. I believe you did some research and found that the two issues concerning vehicle registration are, in the state of Nevada, non-arrestable offenses.
Correct.
Okay. So you can... they. it is not discretionary upon the officer to put you in steel bracelets and take you to jail over those issues in
Correct.
The state of Nevada.
And that is based on a Supreme Court ruling. As long as you're willing to sign a basic traffic-related citation...
Right. You promise to appear.
Promise to appear. If you don't sign, then they can hook you.
Right, but my understanding then is that if the citizen says, yeah, I'll sign...
Then they can't take you.
The officer cannot. It is not his discretion to take you.
Yeah, okay. By ruling of the Nevada Supreme Court in a previous case few years
back. Of course, the liar McGill, I'm sorry, Deputy McGill, he has to follow that. So he could not arrest you for the vehicle issues.
Right.
So he wanted to arrest you, so he trumped up the lie that you were pretending to be a police officer. Even though you gave him your resignation date from Metro, he was angry, he didn't like you, he wanted to teach you a lesson, so he made up this bullshit story and put you in bracelets and took you to jail.
That is pretty much sums it up, yeah.
Okay, so, I just want to make sure that I understand the facts.
I was in jail for about 4 hours or so, 4 or 5 hours. I got bailed out, released. So my arraignment was August 3rd at 1:30 in Justice Court Department A. I looked at the calendar the night before online. I wasn't there. I went in anyhow. I got there about half hour, 45 minutes beforehand. And sure enough, I was not on the calendar. And I was told, yeah, your arraignment has been vacated. They still have up to a year and a day to charge you. So check your mailbox. If it happens, you'll get a new arraignment date. But thus far, the case has never made it out of the sheriff's office over to the DA's office, which is not uncommon. This sort of thing happens all the time, especially when it's an issue of you might beat the rap, but you won't beat the ride, and it's so thin we don't send it, whatever the case might be.
Right, right.
So anyhow, I didn't have to deal with that.
Again, you and I know this, but putting the audience in the loop, prosecutors don't like to prosecute losing cases.
No, they won't. If there's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, they won't.
So this is a small community. Even in the big city, the prosecutors all know the senior members of the police agency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all the more so in a small environment like Pahrump. So I can't imagine, if you imagine some backroom dialogue, I can't imagine there was anybody at the Nye County DA's office that was saying, yeah, give me that packet on Carnes. They're like, dude, that was so stinky and dirty. Just don't even send it over.
May have been. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not privy to those conversations if they're going on. I don't know. But
that's how it works.
Generally speaking, yeah. Absolutely. So my next step now is I've actually written up a motion to exonerate bail. Because we were going to bail me out just with our own money. It wasn't a huge bail. But the court had closed by the time that happened. They held me in there long enough court to close. So we had to use a bondsman who then has a con. So I've been beholden to this bondsman in Las Vegas. Which, by the way, bail bondsman, you don't know. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. You guys have no idea what you're doing. Yeah. It's crazy. It seems like they're flying by the seat of their pants.
It's a pretty lucrative gig.
Yeah,
bail bondsman.
Maybe they're making some dough at it. But anyhow, so that's the latest with me. No charges have come through the DA's office.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, one fun story, one not so fun story. I didn't know this until I read the news article, but if you are a West Point graduate, you can have your wedding at West Point. Well, as of June 26, 2015, that includes same-sex marriage. So two West Point graduates got married. They were the first same-sex couple to wed at West Point. And so they were out, here we go, fast forward like a month, and they're out shopping, and some guy walks up. He starts mouthing off anti-gay stuff at them, and then he cold cocks one of the two guys in the face. And the other guy, I don't know, husband, wife, I don't know how that works.
the partner, I think, is the term.
Lights him up, beats the snot out of him. I thought it was interesting. He didn't even arrest the guy. Like, you know, you or me, we would have beat the snot out of him and then called the cops. Right?
Right.
He beat the snot out of him and then threw him out of the front sidewalk.
Out of the store?
Yeah. So the cops are looking for him, I guess, because the whole thing was on videotape.
Yeah, that is a gay bash backlash.
There you go.
What that is.
Say that five times fast. what else do we want to talk about?
You know, there was other news when it came to this. You know, a few years ago, the Boy Scouts came out and they decided they're going to ban all things gay.
Oh, yeah.
No gay Boy Scouts, no gay troop leaders or anything like that.
Was that way forever.
For a long time. And then in the last year, the last several months, all of that has changed. Okay, well, we're not going to banish gay Boy Scouts if they want to come in. And just in the last week, they said, and now troop leaders and things such as that as well.
Can be gay, bisexual.
Whatever. Right, but they did put a little bit of a caveat. If you have a troop which has joined the Boy Scouts through like a religious organization, uh-huh. then your organization doesn't allow gays in there for whatever reason, then we'll honor that, which is a big thing within the LDS church. All the Mormon churches,
right.
all of the girls meet one day a week and do a function thing. All the boys meet once a week, and they all tend to do Boy Scouts. Hmm. And, I mean, if you see, virtually every Mormon man yeah. is an Eagle Scout.
I read that because of this decision made by the Boy Scouts just a handful of days ago, that the LDS Church now is, whatever this means, reevaluating their relationship with the Boy Scouts.
Right.
So, but you know, it's interesting because I've seen some stuff on social media condemning this decision, and you know, to me, it's a big yawner. I was a Boy Scout up until about all the way from Cub Scout, Weebelo, and Boy Scout up until about 16 and a half. That's when girls and my driver's license got the better of me and I stopped participating. And stupid of me, too, because I was about one thin red hair away from Eagle Scout. I had like, I don't know what it was, like 16 hours left on my Eagle project and I would have had my Eagle Scout. But hey, girls and cars. So, but some guy's writing about like, I can't imagine having gay scout leaders in the tent with Boy Scouts. Now, for all that time, and my particular troop, we went camping every month religiously.
So did okay. we, yeah, when I was a kid.
I never, in all those years, saw a scout leader in a tent alone with a Boy Scout, or even in a Boy Scout's tent, period.
Nope.
I can't even think of a situation where a Boy Scout was ever alone with a leader.
No.
It was always a group environment. There was always a handful of people around at minimum.
You know, Dave, it's people who sensationalize things that they know nothing about. It's like
right.
anti-gunners that have never held a gun, don't know anything about them. They sensationalize that. They'll sensationalize the Boy Scouts. They'll sensationalize homosexuality. They'll sensationalize religion, whatever they want,
yeah.
just to try to get people to believe their garbage point.
America, the land of drama.
Imagine. We'll be right back.
And we are back, and it's time for what the hell is up with people being critical and criticizing a deal they know nothing about? I'm specifically talking about the Iran nuclear deal. Now, let me start out by saying, whatever you have heard specifics of this deal in the press, they're either nonsense or you're getting only a part of the story. Let me explain what I'm talking about. But the part that irks me before I get into the guts of the deal, the part that irks me is I see people, whether it's commentators on the news, people in the written media, people on social media, what have you, attacking the deal when, in fact, they don't know anything about the deal, or they know so little it's irrelevant. Now, I understand that for some people, Iran is like, you know, what was that guy from Saturday Night Live? It's Satan. You know, yeah, I get that, okay? But still, before one speaks, one should know what's going on, yes? Now, I'm going to tell you, there's so much more to this deal then you know. I'm going to tell you that the characterizations made by the United States government to you about what this deal is complete crap, not even remotely true. Okay? Now, first of all, the P5 plus one nations that were involved in the negotiations with Iran, okay? And it goes on for how long did these negotiations go on? Months and months and months. And actually, they started a few years ago, but the formalized sort of the part where it looked like they were going to have a deal, so everybody got together and called it the negotiations, okay, that started several months ago, and it went on and on and on and on and on, and finally it produced the Lucerne Agreement. Now, the way it's being pitched to you, the U.S. public, and in some of the other Western countries as well, is that this is a way of preventing Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. That's the government story. If you listen to John Kerry testify before the Senate a couple days ago, he said that's a fact. Okay, the fact that it's stopping Iran from developing nuclear weapons. He said that's a fact. And in reference to John Kerry's statement, that's a lie. But this is not surprising because, as I've said on the Dave Champion show for a better part of 14 years, the government lies all the time and lies even when the truth would serve it well. And they have no compunction about lying to you. There's no ethical issue for a senior administration official in any administration, whether it's Bush, whether it's Obama, whoever, of sitting there and knowing the cameras are on and blatantly lying for public consumption. In other words, for your consumption. No ethical issues with that at all from their point of view. They're pushing through an agenda. You, the only thing you can do is you can screw their agenda up. So they want to make sure that the information you receive will allow you to either support it or, at worst, not get involved so they can move forward. What they don't want you to do is oppose it. And they're willing to tell you whatever they need to say publicly to cause you to either agree with it or just go to sleep and not care anymore about that deal. So, first of all, when I say people don't know what the deal is, they only know what the United States government has told them about the deal. Now, there are 17 documents, and a document can be a page, a document can be 47 pages or whatever. There are 17 documents that the State Department has provided to the appropriate members of Congress. Now, if you're like me, when you hear that the State Department has provided them, you're imagining that there's a guy sitting in his congressional office and he's looking at the documents. Okay? That is not at all what's going on. There are special rooms located throughout Washington, D.C., where classified documents are kept. And congressmen, senators, and their staffers who have the appropriate level of security clearance can go into these rooms where these classified documents are kept, and they can read them. They cannot take notes. They cannot take photographs. And the documents cannot leave the room. So it's whatever they can recall of the document is all there is. That's where 17 of these supporting documents for the agreement are residing, are in these secured rooms, even though theoretically they are not classified. Okay. So the fact that and the congressmen and the senators who've seen them and their staffers are saying, even though they're not classified, we're not at liberty to share the contents with the American people. So you don't know what the deal is. If the deal is fabulous or the deal is the worst thing ever, you don't know because the facts are being kept from you. In addition to that, there are two side deals that were made between Iran and the International Agency for, what is it, the International Atomic Energy Administration, something like that, the IAEA. Okay? So, stop it. So, there's two side deals, and John Kerry claims he's been briefed on the side deals, but he hasn't read them. Now, he also said, when testifying in front of a Senate committee, specifically to a question asked by Senator Cotton about what was in those side deals, he said, I can't tell you. The position of the State Department is that's a deal between an independent agency that's not of the United States government and Iran. That's their deal. The fact that we've been briefed on it does not authorize us to tell you, the American people, about the deal. Now, these side deals, supposedly from people who have been briefed and have spoken on the QT, these side deals deal with inspection issues. So if you claim that you're doing inspections, wouldn't how the inspections are being done be important? For instance, one of the allegations being made is that within this side deal, inspectors don't go into Iran and inspect at the sites. Iran says, here's the sample we've chosen to give you. Okay, now tell me this. If you went for a job position and it required drug testing, would the lab or the company allow you to bring in a urine sample that could be from anyone? Or would there have to be, is the system set up so there's some level of confidence that the urine they're testing for drugs is actually yours? Of course. They're going to make sure, to the best of their ability, that the urine being provided for the drug test is yours. Unless you're the IAEA testing Iran's nuclear samples, and then Iran gets to choose them and present them to you as whatever they want. Now, if you think this is a mistake, if you think, see, I knew that was a bad deal, it's not. There's no mistakes here. This is exactly as the United States government wants it to be. And the reason the United States wants it to be this way is this is not a deal to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. This deal is the welcoming of Iran into the community of nations that possess nuclear weapons. This is putting the welcome carpet out. This is the handshake. Come be a part of us. Rather than the inevitable, Iran is going to get nukes and they're going to be completely outside the framework of the nuclear nations. They're going to be independent. They're going to be rogue. The community of nuclear weapons nations doesn't want them to be outside that circle. So they're welcoming Iran into the circle, and that's what this is about. Furthermore, it also speaks to a dramatic paradigm shift for the United States and the Middle East. For 60 years, the United States has been on the other side of the planet, and there has been a significant strategic value to the United States having tension between Israel and the Arab states and having Israel as the superior party. And I'm not going to get into superior as far as military power, and I'm not going to get into why that was a crucial part of the tension. However, all that changed when we went into Iraq and Afghanistan. We now have military bases there, special forces operating bases there. We have drone bases there. We have intelligence operations there. Basically, we are now the preeminent military power in the Middle East, where for the previous 60 years, we've been back on the other side of the planet. Pretty much all we had was a little bit of stuff in Saudi Arabia. We had a base in Bahrain, and we had Navy in the Gulf and so forth. But now we have a giant, effective military footprint in the Middle East. We are the 900-pound military gorilla in the Middle East. So that paradigm that was needed between Israel and the Arab states for 60 years no longer serves U.S. interests. We could care less. It's yesterday's news. So this is a dramatic paradigm shift where we used to, for our own reasons, our own interests, we used to hold Israel up here and kind of keep the Arabs down here. Now we're saying we don't need to do that anymore, and it serves our interests more to put everybody on a level playing field. We don't need to have just a nuclear Israel now. Moving forward for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we want a nuclear Muslim country in the Middle East also. That serves U.S. interests moving forward, according to the power players, the planners. I'm not going to explain to you why I think that is. Time is short. But I did want to explain to you that that's the agenda. If you don't agree with me, it's okay, because over time, you're going to find out I was right. Bill, what do you think?
I think we need a 150-pound banana to feed that 900-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I think about this is I'm kind of on the side of what Donald Trump recently said in the last day or so, is if he were president, he would start by shutting down the entire executive branch of the government and then essentially starting it back up one branch at a time with limitations and starting it all over. When the government has these 17 pages, which are not classified, but they're treating them as classified.
As if, yeah.
You got a sign that you won't say anything about it. We have no idea. You scumbags work for us, according to the Constitution.
Right.
You scumbags actually work for the big money brokers. You know why Boehner is still in charge of the House and why McConnell is still in charge of the Senate, although the rest of the Republicans don't really care for them? To protect the money that's coming in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
To protect their fortunes. It is a job. And the job isn't the paycheck that they get.
No.
The job is the negotiations that they make and the legislation they put through. And those two asswipes are in there to protect that kind of money. They're keeping that information from us. It affects us.
Oh, yeah.
They are supposed to work for us. And I got to tell you, man, the government at all levels has been backing us into a corner so hard. It's no longer just slightly turning up. the heat on the boiling frog, they're really jacking it up. And I got to tell you, it's going to boil over soon enough. They're going to continue to push, and Americans are going to continue to wake up, and they're going to continue to resist. And that's going to be an ugly thing if they don't stop.
Yeah. And this is being handled just like the recent trade deals. Everything's secret, even though it will probably over the next 10 or 15 years have dramatic consequences to the country. It's all a secret from us.
I bet the big businesses know what's in that secret.
They do, yes.
They wrote it.
And we'll be back.
In the theme of the show, Totally Unprepared, I have no idea what I'm about to rant about. You know what really grinds my gears? Having no idea what to talk about during this segment. I gotta tell you, there's actually been some decent things going on. There's little stuff that grinds my gears here and there. You know, like Dave was just talking about in his last segment, people who are ignorant but they have this big profound opinion about something. That grinds my gears. There's a particular guy that I engage with on Facebook dealing with some political related things. That just loves to throw something out there, and when you correct him on it, he starts attacking you, not thanking you for correcting him. Interesting enough. That sort of stuff grinds my gears. And you know what else really grinds my gears, man? When I order a pizza, I would like you to cut the friggin' pizza all the way through the crust. Don't you just hate grabbing a slice of pizza and it starts coming up and it either doesn't actually come apart or it comes apart part of the way and then rips? Now you got a piece of pizza that's coming down with a silver dollar size lump on the other end. The other one is shortchanged and who knows where the toppings went. Somebody's getting gypped and somebody's getting a bonus. And I got to tell you, sharpen the friggin' pizza cutting tools. For the love of God, sharpen the friggin' pizza cutting tools. If you don't know how to sharpen it, go buy a new one that's sharp. They can't be that much. It's either a little wheel on a handle, or it's this large bowed thing that you can chunk in there. Now, those I know you can figure out how to sharpen. Get a sharpening stone for it. Please, cut the stupid pizza all the way around. By the way, you want to make a delicious pizza at home? I'm going to give you a great recipe. Get yourself a large, like 12-inch corn tortilla. Not flour, I've tried it, doesn't work as well. Corn tortilla. Put down a little bit of sauce, a little bit of cheese, then add another big old corn tortilla, more sauce, more cheese, toppings, maybe a little dusting of cheese on top of that. Pop that into the oven. I have a small pizza maker at home that works great. You don't have to do that. Set your oven to 450. Get one of those pizza cooking stones. They're awesome. You have to heat that up in the oven while the oven is preheating. Put that little tortilla pizza in there. It'll cook in about 5 or 6 minutes. As soon as the cheese is melted, it's awesome. Cut it all the way through and enjoy. And it's also probably, Dave, the very best way to enjoy a taco pizza. Actually, on the corn tortillas. You ever made yourself a little pizza at home?
I've got to tell you.
You don't make anything. I don't think you make anything but bottled water, do you?
Perhaps boiling water?
I've been to your house, and like the kitchen is always immaculate because it's the only room that nobody even walks through.
That's pretty much true. Now, you know, I toast some bagels. I make some protein shakes. Yes. Is that cooking?
Sure, why not?
Some salads once in a while, yeah. But any real cooking that goes on, obviously not in the summertime when it's 127 degrees out, is done out back on the barbecue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I am the same way.
Yeah.
You've been to my house. You've seen I've got a massive stainless grill that's just this big-ass thing. And then I've got probably two more charcoal grills and I think a grand total of at least 4 smokers.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
You know, it's funny you're talking about pizza because, you know, I chose, probably 2 years ago to embark on an entire change in my diet based on research I had done on what's healthy for the body and so forth. And one of the things that I gave up at that time was pizza. And it's not because pizza's necessarily bad in the when I changed my eating habits, I was removing things that I felt were deleterious to my health or to anybody's health for that matter. And pizza does not fit into that category. Pizza was just so many damn carbs. You know, and I love it. So, you know, plowing away all those carbs and just...
You can cut it down, making a tortilla pizza. I'm telling you, man, they're delicious. I make those things not as much as I used to, but I would make them as like a lunch snack. It's a 12-inch, 10, 12-inch, whatever, little corn tortilla setup. Good stuff, man. Share it with somebody.
Does that require me to cook?
Yeah, it would require you to turn on the oven.
Oh, no, no.
And then turn it back on.
Turn on the oven. What is that?
Do you even know how to do that? There's got
to
be a YouTube video.
I'd have to find the controls for the
oven. There's a YouTube video. Yeah, funny stuff. So I'd like to actually go back to what you were ranting about.
Oh, okay.
I have a question on, or not a question, but an observation, that when you were coming out with the information about how people are opining about this particular thing. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, people opine about stuff they know nothing about all the time.
True.
We've talked about that with the Second Amendment, where virtually every anti-gunner has never had anything to do with guns. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
But they have this passionate opinion. They only know one side. Where the pro-gunners pretty much know both sides because they weren't born with a gun in their hand.
Right.
They know how to not have a gun. And they know how they could be a victim if they didn't. When you are going about this, it was interesting that we're getting the information that you're actually doing the research on. I wonder
what?
How it feels to be so opined about this and not have the information that you have actually gone through common sources and gathered.
I've got to tell you, you know, we've through our long association, whatever one might call me professionally, at my core, I'm a researcher and a teacher. Okay. And, you know, I've been researching for 20 plus years. And what's that old expression? Those who do not know history are destined to repeat it.
Yes.
And the funny, like somebody did a cartoon about it, it was funny, and it says, it has the expression, and it's like, or those of us who do know history are destined to sit here and have to deal with all of you people who don't know history, you know,
and continue to
pay the price,
it.
Right, yeah. For the fact that y'all don't know history.
Right.
And that is sort of the frustration, that like that comic line, that's sort of the frustration I feel when I look at people commenting on various news sources and on social media, and the vast, vast majority of the time, they have no idea. Let me give you an example. ISIS destroying all the antiquity in Iraq. We've seen these stories, right?
Okay. Oh, no.
And you see them, like, with a jackhammer, like jackhammering some piece of concrete, and it's got some artistic stuff on it. And there's some news reporter you've never heard of interviewing some guy whose name is... Right? And he's saying that, oh, yes, you know, they are destroying the antiquities in my city and blah, blah, blah. Okay. But there's no validation of any of this. Okay, for instance, I just saw one the other day, jackhammering, supposed to be destroying the antiquities of this city. It's concrete! They're jackhammering concrete! How freaking old could it be?
Antique is concrete.
Right, and then this big chunk falls away, and what's behind it?
Rebar.
No. Well, I think that's why they had the jackhammer and they had a sawzall. They had the one with the circular blade.
Okay, yeah.
And I think there was
concrete
actually rebar
blade.
Holding the blocks of concrete. They were cutting the rebar, right? Antiquities, but what I do know is when the concrete fell away, there was 20th century brick wall behind it. Okay? And you know what 20th century brick looks like versus the natural kind they used in the 19th century and the 18th century, right? And these idiots are watching this video. The concrete looks like he was sawing rebar, and behind it is 20th century red brick, right? And they're saying this, and these guys are just workers. If you've ever been to the Middle East and seen how, these are just workers. These are not ISIS guys, right? They're not wearing the black and all that. Somebody's got a video of workers doing some work in Iraq, and they put these videos up. And say ISIS is just, and the reporter is, you know, they show the footage, but the reporter's not talking to those guys. right? Because they'd be
Trisha Takanawa.
Right. If she said, "Hey, are you destroying ancient things for ISIS?" They'd be like, "What are you talking about?" Right.
Right.
But she'll stand out. So they show the footage, and then she's standing out on some decrepit street in the Middle East, someplace, and blah 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 blah. And they're destroying the antiquities. And the American public, I see them all, "Look, look, ISIS is destroying all these antiquities in the Middle East." Well, first of all, I don't give a fig about antiquities in the Middle East, first of all. Not my problem. Secondly,
you know what I've learned? Their old crap looks like their new crap. Yeah. How do you know if it's antique?
And secondly, you watch that video, there's no antiquities being destroyed. It's all bullshit. And the American people, it's like, here's the bowl of bullshit, and here's the American people.
Eat it, yeah.
It's like, you cannot be this stupid. You cannot be this stupid.
There has not been a single verifiable independent report about ISIS that I have seen yet. No independent news out there with video footage on live things. It's always been submitted. And the State Department is the one that puts it out.
Right.
Is Fox News on the ground? Is CNN on the ground? Is ABC, NBC, CBS, and is the BBC, are any of them on the ground filming, watching, seeing, doing?
Embedded with ISIS.
Yeah. And the answer is no. Are they getting any independent film that somebody shot on their cell phone cam and then uploaded it? No.
No.
Is Al Jazeera even putting this out there?
Oh, and the funniest...
No!
The funniest one is there's actually a still photograph that somebody captured, and it's the big ISIS flag on the wall, ISIS flag on these vehicles, and it shows these guys, shows other people with cameras. Now, somebody's way back taking a picture of them, taking pictures of guys that are praying to Allah, but there's like two guys over here, two guys over here, two guys over. They're trying to stage the photograph, and they're all pointed in different directions. They're not praying to Mecca. They're trying to pray at the right angle
for the shot.
For the shot.
Right.
It's completely contrived.
Yeah.
And people look at this, and they do not get that it's BS. They see it on NBC, ABC, CNN, SBC, all these acronyms and initials. And the American people go, "Oh, look. ISIS destroying the world."
Yeah.
Yes. It's like, please tell me you're not this stupid.
You know, I got to say, probably the only group of people in the world that are less of a threat to us is some tribalman's group down in Zimbabwe, or maybe the native. There are no natives of Antarctica, but if there were, perhaps them.
Penguins.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the penguins of the Galapagos Islands are maybe a less threat. And that's about it. I mean, come on. When I was a contractor for the Department of Defense, we talked about all the various weapons that these various rogue nations
had, threat weapons.
And could they deliver? Could they disseminate? Could they do anything with them? And the answer is they might possess them, but they don't have the technology to do anything with them. I'm not afraid of a man with a gun who has no bullets, and I'm not afraid of a man with bullets and no gun. You gotta have both.
And I'm not afraid of a guy on the other side of the planet.
No, and we'll be back.
Hi, we're back, segment four, where we talk about the things that you email us about, provided they're interesting to Bill and I. And you can email us right here. We encourage you to do so. Lots of interesting, obviously, we come up with stuff every single week, so we know you've got 100 times more stuff than we can think of. Go ahead and email us. We're also on Facebook and...
Totallyimprepared.info.
Info, there you go. We were going to talk about... I have to be sensitive to my engineer. I can't use adjectives I would prefer. This cop, we'll just leave it at that, in Rohnert Park, California.
Yeah, north of San Francisco, a little bit west of Napa.
He's a peach.
Okay, peach, sure.
You want to tell a story?
I think he's a spoiled peach. Yeah, there's a video, and it's racing across the internet right now. It's all over Facebook, all over YouTube. About a guy, he's standing in his front. Now, this guy lives in a cul-de-sac, right? He lives, in the back of the keyhole.
Actually, I think it was a 90. I think he's at the key of the 90.
Yeah, maybe that is. But he lives there. He's been having some trouble, evidently, his family, and it's a nice suburban neighborhood.
Correct.
Matter of fact, this guy's got his boat hooked up to the back of his truck. So we're not talking about, like, some crack house or
no
something.
No, poverty-stricken, yeah.
Yeah. So he's actually, he sees this, he has a video camera, he sees this cop in his little SUV pull onto a street, so he immediately fires it up and starts filming.
Now, we should tell you that apparently the guy with the camera, the citizen,
yep.
Apparently his family, members of his family, have had some negative contact with Roanoke Park PD in the past.
Yes,
we
recently.
Set the stage.
Yeah. So this cop pulls up the street and stops, not pretty much in front of the guy's house, but back about 20 feet. So he's in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
And he sits in his car for a minute and a half.
Yeah. Totally blacked out windows.
Yeah. Puts down the window, takes a camera out, and takes a picture of the man who's filming. Then he gets out, tells the guy wants to see his other hand. Doesn't say hello, how are you, none of that. And this guy's standing in his own yard. The cop tells this guy with the camera, he says, let me see your other hand. And he says, well, I'm not a threat to you.
He says, take it out of your pocket.
Take it out of your pocket. And about the time he says that, he pulls his gun out of the holster and holds it down near his leg.
Yeah.
And this guy with the camera starts to flip out. He goes, hey, I'm not a threat to you. You put that thing on. Don't come near me. Stay off my property. He goes on to this whole thing. And this cop just, he continues pushing. The guy's walking backwards. He's putting, you know, the truck in the trailer. He steps backwards over the tongue. The cop follows him. He's pushing. Eventually, the cop leaves.
Yeah. But the whole time, though, they're interacting. Well, 85% of the time they're interacting, the cop has his gun.
Virtually the entire time.
In his hand.
Yeah.
Not down here behind his leg, which would still bother me, but at least that's some semblance of not trying to be overtly antagonizing.
Yeah.
When you're standing there with your gun like this, that's overtly antagonizing.
Yeah. Because I can't see your hand, I'm going to pull my gun out. Cops, I have to tell you, there is a thing called officer safety. There's a limit to it as well. This is a consensual stop. There's no reasonable suspicion.
Right.
There's no probable cause.
Right.
If you start a consensual stop, and with that consensual contact.
Yeah.
If you start consensual contact and you pull your gun out and order somebody to show you their hands,
immediately becomes a detainment.
Yeah. And guess what? Your implied immunity is gone.
Yep.
You're violating the law. You now stand to be arrested and go to jail.
Yeah. You know, and if we deconstruct this for the audience, who does not have our background, when the officer got out of his car, first of all, there was absolutely no reason for him to get out. No official reason for him to get out of his car.
No, none at all. Guy standing there with a video camera. What do you need to get into your car about?
Right. Now, it's very important, I think, for people to understand. We talk about consensual contacts, detainments, and arrests. Those are the three levels. Consensual contacts, the officer has no more authority than does the appliance repairman when he comes to your house. No more authority than that. He may be there for a reason, but if the contact is consensual, he has no more authority than the trash man, the service repairman, your neighbor coming to say hi. He has zero authority over you when it's a consensual contact. So this guy walks up, and our law-abiding citizen is standing on his own property with his video camera. He's videoing. If it's a consensual contact, there is no such thing as take your hand out of your pocket.
Nope.
If it's a consensual contact and the officer feels that he doesn't like that consensual contact, he can leave.
Or he can ask for you to take your hand out of your pocket.
Correct.
But there's a difference between asking and ordering that.
Right. I could not even begin to count the number of times I said to somebody, would you mind doing X for me when I was in uniform? Okay. Would you mind taking your hand out of your pocket? Would you mind stepping away from that cabinet? What have you? Because at that particular moment in time, I didn't feel I had the authority to give a command. Okay. Would you do me a favor? And probably 98% of the time, oh yeah, all right. Because they don't want to make anything. Usually they don't want to escalate things either. So if your request is reasonable and polite, you say it with a smile on your face, they comply.
Yep.
But here's the important thing. I said if he was uncomfortable with his consensual contact, I'm walking up, I don't like what I see.
Later.
Leave. I want to be very clear so the audience understands why this bothers you and I. If there's no reasonable suspicion, the officer can go back, he can leave, or he can go from consensual contact to detainment. But it's very important for the audience to understand, without reasonable suspicion, he can't move forward to detainment.
No.
That is a constitutional bar. To move forward to detainment is a violation of the law. It is a deprivation of the other man's rights. That is a federal crime. Okay? So, and to be in a consensual contact and bring your gun out, talk about instigating a problem where no problem exists. No official reason to be there. It's obviously a consensual contact. Clearly his ego was bruised. It irked him that he was being filmed. And now he's bringing out a tool that is considered in law enforcement a deadly weapon. It is the use of deadly force.
Lethal force.
And he's bringing that out simply because a law-abiding citizen on his own property during a consensual contact did not agree to take his hand out of his pocket.
Which, by the way, it came out. He had a keys in his cell phone. He put them on the hood of his truck, and he had his hand out the rest of the time. The cop still stood there with his gun in his hand. It's not like he defied the cop by keeping his hand in his pocket the whole time. Yeah. He immediately brought it out, put his keys and his cell phone on the hood, and then was actually, you could see his hand pointing through it. So no reason to have that. What really bothers me the most about this, Dave, is the cop's attitude.
Oh.
His arrogance and attitude, which is my primary problem with the entire industry of policing.
Did it say McGill on his tag? Oh, I'm sorry. No. I'm getting my agencies confused.
There, I have a massive problem with the egotism, the arrogance, and the because I said so, or because I asked. That crap has got to stop. And a number of cops are befuddled as to why, in the last year and a half or so, there's been a lot of police officers that have been ambushed, shot, or killed in this country. And there, it's not a mystery. It's not a mystery.
Well, there's not a lot. There's more than before.
There's more than before. I mean, the accounts of it have risen.
Yes.
Dramatically.
Yes.
Percentage-wise.
Yes.
Or actual number-wise, not so much percentage. So my point being is that this is something, and the ugly truth of it is that the cops have brought on themselves by their arrogance, their I don't care about your rights, I'm going to do what I want to do. And then the rest of the cops, this is the real problem, the rest of the cops not stopping bad behavior in its tracks.
Right. We talked about Sandra Bland, I think, last week. She was the black woman who was arrested for no reason whatsoever by a state trooper in Texas and then died in the hands of was it Roane County?
I think it was. Where, Houston, Texas, down in that county.
All right. So one of the things that came out after that is apparently after the trooper arrested her, he called his supervisor on the phone. Apparently the supervisor was sitting in the station where all communications are recorded. So the call between the trooper and his supervisor was recorded. And there's a video out there on YouTube, apparently through the Freedom of Information Act, or the Open Records Act, somebody got a hold of that. And you hear the officer, you can hear the audio, the trooper explaining to his supervisor what Sandra Bland did and how he responded to her actions. And what the people who put this together did is they give his statement, like a short snippet of his statements, and then they play the video pertaining to what he just said.
Okay.
And what you see on this presentation is that this trooper lied his ass off to his supervisor. Okay. Virtually every claim he makes about what he did or what Sandra Bland did is an out and out lie. Because he says, well, she said this to me, and she said, I'm not going to, again, I don't want to burden our engineer with having to bleep out everything I say, but the trooper saying, she said this to me, and she said that to me, and she said, and it's all this profanity. And then they cut to the segment of the dash cam video that he was speaking of, and she doesn't say any of those things.
Nope.
And he's telling her, he tells the supervisor, I told her clearly, she was under arrest and what she was under arrest for. Okay? And then they cut to the video of her asking again and again, arrested for what? Arrested for what? Tell me what I'm being arrested for. What are you arresting me for? And he never answers because he's got nothing. He just didn't like her attitude.
Okay, but here's the bonus of this deal. Because all of this was audio video recorded, we now get a lousy cop off the streets.
If
Oh, he'll be gone. If this guy hasn't already resigned, he'll be gone one way or another. And nobody else will probably, I don't know, NCSO might hire him. But other than that, you probably won't see this guy hired. And that's one of the advantages to body cams, why we should all look for those things. This will get one of these guys that shouldn't be on the streets off the streets.
But this speaks a bit, I think, to the arrogance you were talking about. This is systemic.
Oh, yes.
A cop does something. He forgets he has a body cam on. He calls a supervisor and completely lies about the entire encounter to justify his bad conduct.
Just made himself a Brady cop.
And absent the camera, what would the supervisor have said?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There needs to be perhaps even national legislation on body cams.
It needs to be changed.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we'll be back next week.
Thanks for being here.